forget your decks. VCs don't check your decks. They only spend maybe 2 or 3 minutes on your deck. Spend as little time on your deck as you can. Be able to tell a story. I think a lot of founders cannot tell this story. The money would go where the idea is. Money doesn't care what color you are. If I can make a return to my LP doesn't care if the founder is black, white, Indian. He just wants to see a return. So for me, I think the reason why money is not going into black corporations is not really, there is the racism thing, but that's not the only reason. I think we do not know each other. We do not know each other well enough.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Equity Merchants. Our guest for today is Ajani Windsor Ariago, a venture partner at Expat Dojo. Many startups fail in their first year, and Expat Dojo's mission is to support portfolio companies to get to Series A. In this episode, Ajani shares his thoughts on venture capital in Africa and how he works with founders on the continent. So, I like starting out on a personal note. So, before we get to what you do in investing, I'd like to know who you are. What do you do? So, just share a little bit on that.
So, I am Ajani Windsor-Ariago. I work for a VC based in California. The VC is called Expat Dojo. What we do at Expat Dojo is we invest in post-revenue startup company with a focus on black founders. So in the last year, almost 52% of all the companies we've invested in are actually black founders or women founders, with a huge concentration of our investment in Nigeria, Ghana, Uganda, and then African-American founders. So that's what I do on a day-to-day basis, is I look for inspirational founders, because a lot of African founders are not heard. So for me, on a day-to-day basis, I speak to between 5 to 10 founders based on the continent. And what I do is I learn a lot from the founders, because a lot of the founders think that VCs know everything. So when they come to the meeting, they have the pitch deck, they have the story. But for me, speaking to founders is actually a learning experience, because a lot of us don't live on the continent. So a lot of the founders are actually teaching you things that they don't even know like they're teaching you. So that's what I do on a day-to-day basis. Is for me, even though I'm investing, I'm learning from founders day-to-day, especially the founders in the African market, because they have a lot to teach us here.
Yeah. Okay. Before Expat Dojo, what did you do and how did you land at investing in startups?
So I used to work for a company based in Lagos called Platform Capital. Have you heard of them?
Yes, I have.
Platform Capital is run by this amazing man called Dr. Akindele Akintoye. He actually used to work for a private equity firm. So I actually met him like 6 years ago, and he told me about a vision he had to invest in startup companies. At that time, I used to do real estate. So like I didn't know like a lot about the VC space. So he was actually transitioning from PE into VC, and he actually needed someone to head the North American team. At that time, what he was doing has never been heard of. This was an African person who raised his own fund in Africa, who was invested in startup companies in North America. It's still not done today. Like, I've never even heard of it still. I've never heard of an African person who raised a fund in Africa who was investing in Northern American companies. So, like, I saw his vision. I loved his vision. It trained me. Like, we did a lot of deals together. I had the privilege to sit on some amazing deals he did with, like, a company here called Mike Ventures. It's a big VC in LA. So that's how I got into the VC industry, through Platform Capital, which is an African-based VC doing deals in North America. So that's how I got into the industry like 5 years ago.
It's clear that women founders and black founders are underfunded. Put together, they get less than 3 or 5% of venture capital. So there's clearly a huge need there. In your opinion, why do you think that these two groups have received less venture capital? And what do you think investors can do to ensure that they get more capital going forward?
I mean, to be honest, I think if you raise a fund, right, and you are, let's say, a Caucasian person in California, people invest in people who look like them. People like to do business with people who look like them, right? So I think, like, in America, there's a huge disparity in investing in black companies, right? Because a lot of the capital seems to be allocated to Caucasian people. So I think the disparity is that in America, black people and Caucasian people, we don't really know each other that well. We don't communicate with each other. We don't speak to each other. We don't understand each other's culture. So for me, it's, let's move it away from business. Let's get to knowing each other on a personal level. Like, I live in a white neighborhood. I know my neighbors, right? I go across the street, I introduce myself to my neighbors. I tell them who I am. My name is Ajani. I'm Nigerian. I'm from Ghana. I lived in England. I just moved into the neighborhood. So I think when we get to know each other on a personal level, business becomes easy when we get to know each other on a business level, right? So for me, I think the reason why money is not going into black corporations is not really, I mean, there is the racism thing, but that's not the only reason. I think we do not know each other. We do not know each other well enough. And also with the women founders, I think with the women, I would be actually, I would actually like women to speak to that, because for me personally, I speak to a lot of founders day to day. I do not care where the idea is coming from. Men have good ideas, women have good ideas, I invest in good ideas. But certain people always think in a different way. But now you can see, like, it's actually changing. I see a huge change when it comes to funding going towards women. But with the black founders, and now also, I think we need more black VCs. That would solve the problem. When we get black VCs raising huge funds, we can actually change this problem. Because I was checking the stats the other day. Between me and you, even when black VCs raise funds, they do not invest in black companies. I'm not going to mention the name of the VCs. I was checking the stats the other day. There's a particular VC based in LA. They raised a huge fund based on the thesis that they were going to be investing in black companies. They invested in 134 companies last year. Only 14 of them were black. There's another VC based in LA. They invested in 38 companies last year. Only 3 were black. And these are black VCs who raised their whole fund telling people we invest in black founders. So even when you allocate money to black VCs, it still doesn't solve the problem. So I think it's very easy just to say, this is a problem of race. So why are black VCs not investing in black founders? For us at Expert Dojo, this is what we're doing now. Because we automatically think if you give money to black VCs, they will invest in black founders. The stats do not back that.
That's an interesting point you've made, because a lot of the arguments are framed around having either more female VCs and more black VCs or more black people in senior management positions. But now that you say very few black VCs actually invest, like, do majority investments in black founders, then that now raises a different question. What is the real problem? Why are black VCs not investing in black founders, or at least not having majority of their investments go into black founders? So is it a case of we are not seeing good enough ideas from this demography, or is it a case of we are not seeing these people? And then it probably goes back to the first thing you said about not knowing ourselves. Is it that we are black, but we still do not know too many black people? So we are still living in that bubble of we are black, and we are still seeing a lot of white people. So which is it for you?
Even if you look at Africa, the way the Western VCs talk about Africa, they talk about Africa like it's one place. Africa is a continent of 54 different countries, different cultures. The way you break into a business in Nigeria, might not work in Ghana, might not work in Uganda, because we all have very, very different cultures, right? So even Africa between ourselves, I mean, I think in the last 10 years, it's actually getting better where Nigerians know Ghanaians, Ghanaians know South African people. We do not know each other. So I think getting to know each other on a personal level, understanding each other's cultures, business will flow, ideas will flow, because the money would go where the idea is. Money doesn't care what color you are. If I can make a return to my LP doesn't care if the founder is black, white, Indian. He just wants to see a return. So I think a lot of the times I really, really focus on the cultural issues of getting to know each other. If we get to know each other, we understand each other's stories, then the money will flow into our ideas, right?
Yeah. Okay. So at Expat Dojo, how much do you typically invest in startups? And do you have what are certain qualities that you look for in these startups?
So I think due to the way VC is now, we actually invest in post-revenue startups. We invest between $50,000 to $100,000 initially, but we do follow up with $1 million if the business reaches Series A. So we look for, we do like every type of business. We're into healthcare, logistics, tech, because if you look at the Western VCs, there's a huge focus on fintech in Nigeria. All the money is going to fintech. It's like you cannot find new ways of sending money to Africa is a really, really innovative business. No, it's not innovative. How many times do we fund businesses because they come up with an app where you can just send money to Ghana? How innovative is that? So now at Expat Dojo, we're trying to invest in healthcare. There's an amazing company based in Ohio called Flerry, founded by an African guy. And this guy has designed a way for Africans in the diaspora to pay for healthcare for their family members in Africa. How much has he raised? He's not raising that much money because it's not a fintech business. So we're funding healthcare, we're funding logistics, we're funding fintech, but I think healthcare is a huge thing for us because this actually solves real problem, because a lot of the money people send back home, like a lot of it is for healthcare. If your grandmother is sick in Ghana, if your grandmother is sick in like a little village in Nigeria, if you send the money back home, a lot of the times the money is not going to be used for healthcare because they've got other problems. So now we need to find a way where we're building a system where there is a founder building a system. If you send the money to the Flerry app here, we can make sure that the money is actually used for healthcare back home. So this is what we do. We're not doing the Western thing where we're all just piling money into fintech or how many times can we fund food delivery businesses? I mean, it's a joke, seriously. It is a joke. I mean, go on Crunchbase and see some of the companies raising money. It's just shocking to see like every single thing you see. Fintech, buy now, pay later, save now, pay later. There's nothing innovative coming out. And like the moment the founders see that this is where the money is going, innovation is gone. Everyone is building things specifically to raise money, not to solve problems anymore. We need African founders solving problems again, not just building something to raise money. And I think I think it looks like that's where VC in Africa is going. Everyone is looking to raise money. So how do I raise money? Build something fintech, send money from London to Accra, you would raise some money. No innovation is coming out. So I think Expat Dojo is solving that.
Okay, so you say you're solving that, but how exactly are you solving it? Because the fact that you are investing in different verticals, I mean, you're just one VC, but how exactly or what else are you doing beyond just investing? What else are you doing to ensure that there is a lot more innovation going on in other sectors?
So for me personally, I speak to between, like I told you already, 5 to 10 founders a day.
Yeah.
They live in Africa. They tell you the problems in Africa. We do not know the problems in Africa sitting in a nice office in Silicon Valley. You don't know what's going on in Africa. You need the Africans on the ground to tell you the problems in Africa. So when I'm speaking to founders in Africa, they are educating me, telling me, look, this is what the problem is. This is what the problem is. So I think speaking to the African founders, making sure we're listening to African founders because they know exactly what's going on the continent. They live on the continent. They understand the continent. So for me, speaking to African founders and having a network of people who live on the continent, explaining to you what problems that they have on the continent on a day-to-day basis. So that's how we're solving the problems. So a lot of the times I would just call a founder and just have a conversation with them. Not a conversation about investment, not a conversation about raising money, just a conversation, hey, what are the problems in Lagos at the moment? They would tell you stories that would blow your mind. Yesterday, I spoke to a founder in Ghana, and he was telling me things that, I mean, I had to take notes after speaking to the founder. When you speak to a founder and it's not about raising money, they're quite very honest with you about the problems in Africa. And I think this is how we can solve problems. By having conversation, not always targeted to raising money, having open conversations, and then you would get to understand the real problems in Africa. So this is what I do personally. And I would encourage all Western VCs to do that. Call the founder, have a normal conversation with them. Because a lot of the times when people are raising money, they have their pitch game. They have their deck game. They don't tell you the truth. They just tell you stories just to raise money. But if you call a founder on a Saturday, and you have a conversation with them, hey, what's going on in your life? They would tell you things that would blow your mind. And then you would get to know what problems are going on in Africa. And then we can actually help by sending money, by investing in these problems to help solve the type of problems that they're telling us that they're having.
At Expat Dojo, when you invest in a startup, what level of control are you typically looking for?
Normally we come in with 3 to 7% based on the company, right? But what we do well is we help the companies grow. Because a lot of the companies, you would not survive if your company doesn't get to Series A. So we really focus on getting the companies to Series A. So like a lot of the VCs, they just write you a check and they walk away. A lot of founders don't understand how to market, how to get new customers. So we focus on growth factor. Because if we help you grow, because I'm thinking VC is moving from the valuation game, right? Where we're just getting higher and higher valuations to like the growth game. Now, you actually need to provide revenue to VCs. So now we're actually helping the companies actually generate revenue. That's what we do. We have meetings with them on a weekly basis, checking the website, checking the customer acquisition skills, checking how they're reaching out to customers, checking the competitors. So we actually build a relationship with them over 4 years, which is very, very different from the VC model of just cutting the check and just walking away and see you at the exit. We do not do that. We actually build a real relationship with the founders, making sure that the business gets to Series A. Because if your business doesn't get to Series A, I mean, your business is going to die eventually. So this is actually what we do quite well.
Okay. So what are some of the challenges that you've seen startups face, especially your portfolio companies, and how do you work with them to overcome these challenges?
I think telling the truth, right? Because a lot of the times when you're raising money, you tell a lot of things to the VCs, right? So now when we get to due diligence and we're requesting bank statements, we're requesting the monthly recurring revenue they told us before they raised the money, we realize that a lot of the times they'll tell you the gross, not the net. A lot of the times they fudge numbers. So for me, I think a lot of African founders, even founders everywhere, have that problem of trying to picture VC with numbers that are not real, right? So we actually say to founders, look, tell us the truth. What are your numbers? What problems are you facing? And they also have problems raising money that is committed to them. So you will see a founder, they've spoken to a VC, they have a commitment of $200,000. The money never shows up. So it's about letting the founders know that money committed verbally. The fact that someone commits money to you, you've not raised that money until the money reaches your bank. So a lot of founders have the problem where they go like, oh, we've raised $500,000 in commitments. A commitment is not money until that money reaches your bank account. I was speaking to one of my founders yesterday who, after the SVB debacle, some of the VCs were calling them to return money that they've already sent to them. Can you believe that? No, I'm not joking. VCs were asking founders to return money that they've already wired to them. I mean, this is the kind of problem that we're seeing now since SVB has gone down. So I think just making sure you support the founder. Founders really, really struggle. It's a really, really difficult thing to be a founder. A lot of VCs cannot be founders. Being a founder is a really difficult thing. It requires a lot of you. It's actually very stressful on that person. It's quite stressful on the relationships, if they have a family. It's a stressful journey. So I think for me as a VC, we really, really, really support founders and have a very deep, close relationship with them. And also making sure you can introduce those founders to other VCs that you partner with so that they can raise more money if they need it. Because a lot of founders don't have a great network. So VCs are actually good with introducing founders to other VCs. So this is what we do quite well at Expert Dojo.
Let's run back a little bit to when you just started out investing at Platform Capital. What was the first investment you made or that you led? And why did you choose to invest in that startup?
The first investment that we led was with a company called Solifon. Right?
Okay.
Solifon is a company based in San Francisco. It's a peer-to-peer lending app where, let's say I needed like $100. I can go into the app, say I need $100, and then you can find someone else on the app willing to loan you the $100, and then you actually give them a tip. Because a lot of the times I understand that problem. When I was young, living in England, and I was single, sometimes you need like $500 till you get paid. And there's a lot of shame in asking family members for money sometimes when you're young and you're living by yourself. So when I saw that idea, I thought, this actually solves a lot of problems. So Platform Capital led that round. I think we invested almost $3 to $4 million in that investment. And that company is really, really growing. I think they are Series B now. If you check them on Crunchbase, they're doing really, really well. So that's the first investment we actually led at Platform Capital. We also invested in a biotech company called Conical. Have you heard of them?
No, I've not.
Conical is doing an amazing job. It's a biotech company based in Silicon Valley, run by an Nigerian called Osh. They actually combine synthetic biology with silicon technology to create a device that can map out over 5,000 smells. And currently, they have a device at the San Francisco airport that can actually detect explosives. So that's also one of the companies we invested in. It's actually an engineering owned based in Silicon Valley. And that round was actually led by Platform Capital. Platform Capital did really like amazing things in North America. I mean, Platform Capital even invested in a company based in Mexico called Strap, right? What Strap have done is they've taken the cane. Do you know the white cane that the visually impaired people use when they walk in? They've actually digitized it, and they actually use the same technology that the driverless cars like Tesla uses to build a strap where visually impaired people can wear a strap on their chest with a square deck on the chest that can actually help them walk without using a cane. Amazing technology. Like, that's actually changing how the visually impaired actually move around. I think that's going to be like a unicorn in the next few years.
So let's talk about some of your African portfolio companies. Why did you choose to invest in them? Like, you can just maybe pick a few and then explain why you decided to invest in them.
There's a company, let me pick a really good one.
Okay.
We have a company called StraightLender, right? They actually lend money to, I think, SME traders. Well, we also have a company called Bezo Money. It's also, I mean, even though I was bashing fintech, these are all fintech companies, because this is what we were also doing in the past. They are also helping small businesses access loans, because I think in Africa it's very difficult to get loan from banks. I think the interest rate is almost 24% to 30% for like small loans. So we're actually looking at businesses that can actually lend money to small businesses. Because a lot of the times you would see a business in Africa that all they need is $4,000 to $5,000, right? Just to start a small business, and they cannot access the fund. So any business in Africa that's actually helping small businesses, we do support them. So that's like one of the companies that we invest in. Bezos Money and TradeLender, those are really good companies that we support. I really, really like small businesses. Any company building a platform that's helping the guy who needs $2,000, $5,000, sometimes even $500 to start a small business. You cannot access $500 to start a business. It blows my mind. So anyone building a platform for those really, really small companies, we really, really, really support them, because like, that's how you change, that's how you create wealth in small communities, by targeting small businesses. The big businesses will do well, the medium businesses will do well. So we support, like, we're supporting the platform, really, really helping small businesses. Really, really, I mean, small businesses meaning like $1,000.
Last year was like a year that humbled a lot of the expectations we've come to see in the startup space. So you saw slashed valuations, you saw companies struggling to raise funds. And it has led many people to begin asking questions, especially down here in Africa. What does an exit look like for African startups? Of course, because the market isn't so mature, it just means it's a lot harder. So how do you at Expert Dojo think about exits when you are investing in startups?
That's a very, very, very good question, because this is something that I was talking about actually yesterday to one VC, because the African market is not very sophisticated, right? So a lot of the Western VCs, they invest in Africa without having an exit strategy. There's no IPO for you, right? So if a lot of the exits are through M&As, right? Or maybe selling to a secondary market. And what a lot of VCs in the West do not understand is when a company reaches Series A in Africa, that's an exit for someone who invested in a pre-seed. That's an exit. When a company reaches Series B in Africa, that's an exit for a lot of the African... I think the African VCs understand this actually better than the Western VCs. So for me, I'm speaking to a lot of the African VCs, and they're teaching us how to exit businesses in Africa. So a lot of the exits happen in Series A. Can you believe that? So if I invested 50,000 when you're pre-seed and your company is valuated at, let's say, $5 million, and now you reach Series A with a valuation of $50 million, that's my exit. So that's how a lot of companies exit Africa. And then when it comes to valuations, between you and I, we both know most valuations are not real, right? So I will speak to a founder who has no revenue, who would tell me my company is valuated at $10 million. And I ask him, how do you come by that valuation? Your mother would not buy that business for $500 because you know it's not a real valuation. So I think valuations are, when you said a lot of valuations have been slashed, I do not believe valuations have been slashed. I think valuations are real now. They've become real. So previously, people just come up with valuation. They just pull numbers from the sky. But now people are actually doing their due diligence. A lot of the times, a lot of VCs don't do any real diligence. They do what I call momentum investing. You look at what the big boys are doing, and then you just follow through, right? So let's say you look at a company like Platform Capital, and you have a smaller VC. You look at what Platform Capital are doing. You don't do any due diligence. You just make the kind of investments that they make. But I think I'm really happy with what the market is now. People are actually doing real due diligence now. The market is real. Valuations are real. So valuations have not been slashed. Valuations have returned to what they're supposed to be. They've become real numbers. So I think it's a great thing that's actually happening in the market. I mean, for me, I think it's a great thing.
Okay. So something that's closely related to what you just mentioned is, I mean, African VCs VCs who are investing in Africa have been accused severally of not doing appropriate due diligence. So if a startup applied to Expert Dojo to get funded, how long does it take before a decision is made? Because founders also want to get a decision as fast as possible. So how long can this take?
So the first point of contact would be your venture partner. So you send your deck. It takes less than 2 minutes to review your deck, right? But for me, you speak to the founder. When you speak to the founder, you get to know the founder, you get to know the story, and then you go through the metrics. You go through the monthly recurring revenue. How much money do you have in the bank? What's your burn rate? You check how much, so we have a due diligence team of 12 people, and then we do have like metrics on an expert sheet. Some of which I can share with you. We rate the founder, we rate if they have an MVP, do you have a go-to-market strategy, do you have a product that differentiates you from the competitors in the market, what's your monthly recurring revenue for January, February, March, is it growing, are you in a growing sector, is this a company that can get to Series A? So we have a lot of like internal metrics, some of which I cannot share with you. And our due diligence process takes approximately 3 weeks, which is not long. Because if you're in private equity, due diligence takes 3 to 4 months. So at Expert Dojo, our due diligence takes 3 to 4 weeks max.
Oh, okay. I guess that's a very good turnaround time for any founder.
Of course.
Anyone can live with not hearing from you for 3 months. For 3 weeks. So let's move on to another interesting topic, which would be fear of missing out as an investor. So you mentioned that a lot of VCs often invest based on who else is investing. So if a respected person or a respected VC is in a deal, then, well, that looks like a good deal to them and they just go ahead with it. How do you deal with fear of missing out, especially because you're investing in Black founders and in Africa where exit opportunities are not so plenty, and if you could get one really big company, that would be great. So how do you deal with fear of missing out?
I personally don't think FOMO is a real thing, because I think there are thousands of founders, there are thousands of deals, there are thousands of companies being built every single day. And even if you look at all these great companies. If you look at Apple, if you look at Google, if you look at Facebook, go onto Crunchbase and check the pre-seed rounds and see who invested. You'll be shocked that Apple only had 2 investors pre-seed. Facebook had 2. Google had like only 6 individual angel investors, and all the big boys came in Series A, right? So if you're a big fund, if you missed the pre-seed, you can still catch them in Series A or B. By the time they get to C and D, you know they're gone if you're not a big fund. But the fear of missing out is if you can raise enough money, you would always catch the company at Series A or B. So I think there's just lots of companies. I don't think there's a real fear of missing out if you're speaking to founders, if you're really investing in innovative ideas, if your investment thesis is spread out into different verticals, you would always find a great company. And this whole idea of this, I hate the word unicorn so much, right? Not every business is a unicorn. If you're able to build a $500 million business, that's a great business. Your business doesn't have to have a $1 billion valuation. So now I think with all the press, with TechCrunch and all this tech cabal and all these new people, where raising money is being celebrated, right? So now if you go online, you see this founder raised $10 million. Tech media should be doing way better than just putting a picture of someone wearing a fleece hoodie with their name on it, that they just raised $10 million, they just raised $20 million. It creates a bad culture, which is why I like what you do, where you're actually telling people real stories about VC. This is a story about the VC. This is a story about the founder. This is a story about an emerging technology that people do not know. So I think tech media can actually play a part in actually educating people to let people know, hey, there's a new emerging market in Uganda. There's a new emerging market in Ghana. There's a new emerging market in Senegal, because all the money seems to be concentrated in Nigeria, Kenya, Egypt, South Africa, maybe Ghana. Like 5 African countries are raising all the money. What happens to the startup in Uganda? Who is going to bring him to light? So this is what we need people like yourself in tech media to do. They should be doing a better job at teaching VCs and letting VCs know where the new emerging market is coming from, because they don't live on the continent. So that's actually what I think.
Okay. If you had to speak with a founder who had never raised funds and he or she is looking at raising funds, what would be your top 3 tips for this founder?
My top tip is forget your decks. VCs don't check your decks. They only spend maybe 2 or 3 minutes on your deck. Spend as little time on your deck as you can. Be able to tell a story. I think a lot of founders cannot tell their story, because a lot of the times I've actually been in rooms where people invest in a company because they like the guy. Can you believe that? That's someone's due diligence. I like the guy. I like him. So let's invest in him. So if you have a way, if you're very good at telling stories, a lot of founders cannot tell their story. They can tell the stories to the friends, but when you're in front of a VC, you need to be able to tell them your story. How did you get here, right? Because sometimes I see two types of founders. I see a founder with a great product but cannot raise money. And I see some founders who have really bad products, but they're very good at raising money because they understand the art of telling stories, right? So having a great product alone would not help you raise money if you cannot speak to the product. So I think founders should be really, really, really good at telling the story. You can tell your personal story, tie that story to how you arrived at that product, merge it together, and make sure that the VC buys into you as a person. Because really, 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 I can go with the cliche that VCs invest in people, not in businesses, right? So I think I would always tell the founder to really, really be good at telling the story. If you can tell us the story, I mean, if you go to a party, if you go to a place that you do not know people, what do? You tell stories. Even this interview is a story. I'm telling you a story about my journey of how I got into VC, right? So I think if founders can tell a good story, spend as little time on your deck as you can, tell a really, really good story, tie that story to your product, and I think VCs will keep you in mind. They will remember you. They might not invest in this idea because most businesses fail. They might invest in your next idea because you've built a relationship where you have an access to that VC guy because they like you. So I think that's how you win eventually, right? So I think that's my advice for founders. Be good at telling stories and be good at tying your personal story to your product. You would raise money.
All right. Okay, so thank you so much for your time, Ajani. I think there were a lot of very helpful tips and thought-provoking subjects that you mentioned here. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
That's it for this week's episode of Equity Merchants. If you enjoyed this conversation, you should check out other episodes of the podcast with other interesting guests. Finally, you can share this podcast on your social media. It helps more people discover it. Thanks for tuning in and see you in the next one.